RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
As a cardiologist and a chef, Dr. Michael Fenster has combined his culinary talents with cutting-edge medical expertise and insight. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. You are listening to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike on Radio MD. Make sure that you head over to www.cardiochef.com, see what I'm up to. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe to the newsletter, which comes out before every show. You get the recipes we're going to be doing, some fun facts, healthy bits and bites by the numbers, so on and so forth. All great stuff. Today, I am terribly, terribly excited. We're talking about something near and dear to my heart, custom craft butchery. I've got partners, Abraham Gingers and Catherine L. Waters, who are co-partners, co-owners of the Cloven Hoof. It's a whole animal craft butchery service providing fresh, local pasture-raised cuts of meat in Missoula, Montana. Abraham works as the head butcher. Catherine assists and manages. Carrie does a lot of the lifting with the brand and marketing and social media. And I've got to tell you, as a chef, I am at that farmer's market anytime I'm in town, first thing, because the quality of the pork, the quality of the lamb that these guys are providing is second to none. It makes it so easy to make restaurant quality food in your very own kitchen. So, guys, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Now, I got to just backtrack a minute because, you know, all over the globe, we're seeing what you guys are doing, this custom craft butchery. It seems to be a dying art. I mean, you don't see people going into it. You don't see people taking the time and the effort and the care. Gosh, what made you jump into what some would say is a dying art?
You want to go ahead, Catherine?
Steve, I'll let you take this one since you're the butcher.
Okay. Well, yeah, growing up, I always hunted game and cut my own meat, albeit I usually cut it the wrong way, as butchers would think. And over time, I just became more and more interested in that skill and that knowledge, and coupled with sort of getting into raising animals with a friend of mine and Catherine for a couple years, really kind of drove me to the point of reaching out and trying to find all the literature and all the things that I could, you know, do to self-educate myself on it. And I ended up taking a class from PDX Meats, which is the Portland Meat Collective, on a hog breakdown, and that was really eye-opening and just kind of piqued my interest. And I really enjoyed turning a whole animal into usable cuts for the chef or for the home, you know, for the home consumer. And having the experience with a farmer friend who we then, you know, turned around and started sourcing our products from made the process all that much easier. And then I just hit a point where I started looking for shops in the area that would allow me to train and cut whole animal, and nobody was really doing that in Montana that I could find. And so I reached out and found Fleischer's Craft Butchery in Brooklyn and went and did a 3-month apprenticeship with them last summer, and that basically is that. And here we are, you know, we started this up and are now at the markets.
Well, you brought up something that, you know, it is part of, I think, part of every good chef, certainly every great chef, goes out and sources their product. And it's something I really encourage, you know, folks who want to eat well, eat healthily, eat delicious food at home. You know, it is about spending that effort, doing those things, sourcing some of those ingredients. You know, don't be a collector of recipes and go to the mega market, you know, and buy the instant, you know, hollandaise sauce and the instant mix and this and that. You know, go out and be a chef. Source those ingredients, and the quality of the animals. I mean, you guys take it, you know, you're involved really from the very beginning. You're just not going and getting any old, you know, carcass to carve up, right?
No, not at all. And that was the thing when we started out, was it was really important for us to set a criteria of what producers that we wanted to work with. And so we decided that they can't use antibiotics or hormones, they can't use GMOs in their feed, no corn or soy products. They need to pasture raise their animals so that the animals can be animals and root around outside, be in the sunshine, be in the rain. And then we also required them to have an open gate policy, and that would help maintain transparency between us and the farmer, but also the farmer and the consumer. And that's something that we felt has been just lost in our society. Not many people really know where their food comes from. They think it comes from the grocery store. So a lot of our mission is to kind of reforge that link.
Well, I think that's so important, and not only is just literally some of, you know, the best quality, you know, proteins and pork and lamb that I've ever come across, but you bring up in terms of not only does the healthier, happier animal make for, you know, a better tasting steak or chop, but, you know, you bring up a very, very critical point in terms of health. And I'll give you an example. You talk about it, you know, essentially being organic. So they're being pastured. They're not getting these antibiotics. They're not getting even the corn and the GMO feed. And when we look at animals that are raised in that way, what we find is they're very, very high in omega-3s. Omega-3s are anti-inflammatory, polyunsaturated fatty acids, so critical for our health. But when you look at U.S. beef, for example, compared to pasture-raised New Zealand lamb or pasture-raised Australian beef, you find that U.S. beef contains essentially none. And so you can go from these huge amounts of powerful, healthful compounds to zero simply as a consequence of how you bring that animal up, even if they're the same breed. And that is so, so very very important. And you guys, one of the other things I think is great about what you do is you're actually using heritage breed animals. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you select those animals and maybe why you selected those breeds?
Well, yeah, I guess it'd be important to point out that we are not the farmer, so we don't actually select the breeds, but we work with a farmer who has, you know, chosen to select breeds that we think are excellent as well. And the pigs are Berkshire, and they have a little bit of Red Wattle, which both are heritage breeds. And the sheep are East Frisian, which he also does a sheep creamery, so they're milk sheep. But the way he raises them, you can just tell even by the fact that the sheep aren't necessarily bred for meat consumption, but they still taste amazing because of, like we were just talking about, the way they're raised. But they're both heritage breeds, and they both have been maintained by, well, four of their great nature as farm animals, but also their ability to produce the most flavorful meat. And in that regard, they haven't had the fat bred out of them like a conventional market hog. They haven't had sort of just ease of raising and speed of putting weight on bred into them, which I feel like affects health and flavor. You know, it's just things that animals aren't meant to do. We're trying to push the envelope and trying to grow them faster all the time. So you take away the health and in the end flavor, which those are both important considerations for us when we're eating. You take those away by essentially trying to force them to grow faster. And so these heritage breeds grow slower. They take a little more care, but they turn out a much more healthy and better tasting product.
And you know, you and I have spoken, and I think something that you hit upon in this vein that is so unique and reflected in the product that you provide is that with these mega industrial productions that go on, we really lose the flavor. You know, it becomes sort of vanilla, whereas these animals taste of where they've come from. Would you agree with that?
I would, yeah. And it's something that I think when we talked, we used the word terroir, which the French just, they have a nice way of summing everything, a huge paragraph of information into one word. And it's, you know, everything tastes like where it came from. And it extends to meat as well. It's not just champagne or cheeses or anything like that. What an animal eats is going to, the flavor of an animal is going to reflect where it lives and what it has available to eat. So a pig that eats apples in the fall is going to taste different than a spring pig that's eating fresh green shoots of grasses and other things that are coming up. And so you're going to get different flavor profiles depending on the time of year and the place where the animal's raised.
And I think that is, Abraham, that is absolutely brilliant. And I think it's something that we really don't ever talk about because, as Catherine said, most people go in and think that, you know, their meat comes from a supermarket and it just shows up in this, vacuum sealed, you know, plastic container, but it actually comes in, and we should respect the food because, you know, an animal gave its life for us to be able to partake of this, to nourish us. And when you have something that can actually, you know, taste of where it came from, that's amazing. I mean, people pay the top dollar for, you know, Iberian jambon, because the pigs spend the entire fall, as you said, you know, they're eating acorns, and they get that sort of acorn nut gets into the meat, and when you slice it thin, you can taste everything, including, you know, those acorns, the forest, the fall. When we sip that wine, we talk about, wow, you know, this was a great year, and you can, you know, taste the sunshine on the grapes. Our meat should be the same way, and you know, I think that that is amazing what you guys are providing. And real quick too, I want to get in. Folks can find you and read about what you're doing at www.theclovenhoofmeat.com. How can they find you if they're in the area? You're at the Missoula Farmers Market, correct?
Yes, we are down at the Missoula Farmers Market, which is the Clark Fork Market down by the river. And we are in a red trailer, and we actually open up our back barn doors and have a deli case set up inside with a scale on top. We actually are bringing the butcher shop experience to the consumers at the market, which we feel like is a pretty unique thing. And we've actually had a lot of customers come up and tell us that it looks European style, like something they would see in France. So it's pretty flattering, and we're happy to try to bring that back here to the States, or at least get it going here in Montana.
Well, it's great, and it really is, and I think that sums up. You bring the sort of old world experience charm, and you're also bringing old world deliciousness, because you guys come up with some cuts and you have some sausages. Can you tell the folks a little bit about, you know, kind of what your process is, because everything is so fresh, and, you know, haven't had the great opportunity to visit with you and see. I mean, you know, you were putting stuff in sausage that, you know, I would have just cut up and served. It's such high quality, and it's, of course, it's reflected in the taste. So can you share a little bit about, you know, what your process is, and then some of the goody goodies that you have in that case that gets me so excited every Saturday morning when I get to come by?
Yeah, we pick our animals up on Thursday afternoons, and we do our initial breaking of the carcass, which breaks it down from whole to the whole muscle cuts, so steaks, chops, roasts, that kind of stuff. And then we set aside all of our trim, which is the things that we don't want to throw in the case on Saturday. And those are saved for Friday, wherein we do our sausage making. We do a fully cooked, no nitrate, brine-cured deli ham and belly as well, which is as close as we can get to bacon right now, not having a smoker. And we do our any prepared products, sausages and the like, that night. And then we sell it all fresh on Saturdays. And the sausage is something, like you said, we have limited space in our case to actually display cuts. In a perfect world, we'd have way more space and we'd be able to display every whole muscle that is useful as, you know, in a culinary sense for the home cook or the chef. But we just don't have the space. So some things that normally would stay in whole muscle form end up in our sausage, which, like you say, reflects in the flavor. But also, kind of one of the things that interests me most about whole animal butchery is that you have the ability to take a look at your carcass and decide what you want to keep whole or not. And, you know, some of the bigger stores, those butchers, they're good butchers, but the product that they're allowed to work with comes out of a box, cut into a primal, and all they're allowed to do is trim it down to portions, and they're pretty much stuck in terms of creativity. So, for instance, I like to sell pork flank. Now, it's the same muscle as comes out of a beef cow. It's a little smaller, but it still makes for a decent portion size, and it has the same grain structure and mouthfeel and culinary uses as, you know, carne asada or things like that as a beef flank. You wouldn't normally see that at most shops just because, you know, we have to make the most out of our pigs. And then another one, which I think you really liked, Dr. Mike, was the breast of lamb, which is basically the equivalent of belly off of a hog, but it's that portion of meat off of a lamb, and it has a lot of fat in it, but it works really well braised or boiled or several different preparations, but that's something you don't see too often either. So we try and add cuts or utilize cuts that I feel like, or we feel like, are underrepresented but still are delicious. And then, you know, all our sausages, we use the freshest spices and ingredients we can get our hands on, and they're all organic. So we just try and keep it the quality high all the way, and it shines out in the product.
It really does. And can you tell us some of the different sausages and varieties that you have available? I think I've eaten them all, and they're all just absolutely fantastic.
Well, we have a couple of our staples that we have every single week, and that is the rosemary swine sausage, and that is made with fresh rosemary and then also with some red wine, which is how we came up with that name. We also have
Catherine, I must add, also goes excellent when you serve it with the red wine as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
And we also have a Hungarian Rhapsody, and that is our smoked paprika sausage. That's also a big favorite from folks. We do what we call El Chancho, and that's just little pig in Spanish. That's our chorizo. It's our Mexican style chorizo that we make. We do a boar's breath sausage, and that's heavily infused with garlic, some fresh garlic that we put in. We also have a toasted fennel seed sausage called Finocchio's Nose. And Finocchio is just fennel in Italian. What else? Oh, and we do a sow salutation. That's the name for our breakfast sausage, and that's got fresh ginger in it. And then the last one that we do is like a traditional German bratwurst, and that we've called Schweinhund, which is our good German sausage. So we've got a pretty good variety of sausages that we bring, and we just try to switch it up every single week and bring something new, bring something old, just try to create new recipes. And we actually did introduce last week our first lamb sausage, the Merguez, and that's got the roasted red pepper in it.
And the spice, and I want to thank you, because so often you get something like a chorizo and it's incredibly bland, because when they make it, they don't want to offend anybody by actually putting the proper spice and spice proportions and get the flavor profile. And you guys have done a great job. And that ginger sage breakfast sausage is like heaven on a Sunday morning, you know, in a bite. There's just not enough of that. And how can folks get a hold of you if they can't get to the market, but they want to contact you? What's the best way for them to follow up and get a hold of you?
Well, you can certainly just send us an email, and that's theclovenhoofmeat@gmail.com. We also have a phone number listed. That's Abraham's number. It's on our website, I believe. Again, like you mentioned, it's theclovenhoofmeat.com. I think those are the best ways. We have a Facebook page where you can message us from there as well.
And I've got to ask you, so you guys have this incredible lamb. You got this incredible sausage and pork. What's your favorite cut, Abraham? What's the butcher's secret? What do you steal away and, you know, that doesn't get into the case on a Saturday morning?
Well, unfortunately, since we're only doing one hog and one lamb a week, I don't really have a liberty of stealing stuff away. But if I had to pick, I think one of the cuts that I like the most comes out of the shoulder. It's called the Denver steak, and it was a cut that initially came from beef. It's gaining popularity. It's sort of a newer cut because beef industry, I would say 20 years ago or so, realized that they were kind of running out of cuts and cut names. You know, they were kind of limited on beef, and the shoulder was the area that they were utilizing the least. And so they did some research and came up with all these different cuts out of the shoulder, which are actually really underrated muscles. And the Denver is one. It's basically sits underneath the scapula of the animal, under the shoulder blade, between the ribs and the shoulder blade. And it's got a really nice open grain structure, a lot of intermuscular fat, and a great mouthfeel and a great flavor. And even on pork, it's the same. You know, I really like that steak. In terms of lamb, that's a tough one. But I'd say I really like our merguez, and I can't beat a good lamb chop.
Yeah, no, you can't, because that's what I had last night, and it was fantastic. Guys, I want to thank you so much for not only being here, but really setting the bar and being a leader in something that is so, so critical for chefs and for people to eat well. Thanks again. You can find them at theclovenhoof.com.